This is a BBC podcast. You can get all our podcasts and our terms of use at bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
The calm waters of Botany Bay, where Captain James Cook landed in 1770 and started the wave of European migration that founded modern Australia. Today, it's still a gateway to the country for most migrants. Of course, these days, it's mostly by air. Passenger jets fly over the bay as they come into land at Sydney's International Airport. But the nature of migration to Australia is changing, with more people coming to the country temporarily to work, rather than to settle for good. I'm Claudia Taranto, and this is Workers Without Borders on the BBC World Service. I'm travelling the Asia-Pacific region, exploring the profound impact of transient labour on individuals, families and countries. Tonight at East Lakes Community Centre, right by Sydney Airport, the traditional model of migration is in full swing. 60 people from 23 countries are becoming Australian citizens.
I'd now like to introduce the Mayor of the City of Botany Bay, Mick Neely.
From this time forward,
I pledge my loyalty to Australia and its people, whose democratic beliefs I share.
Let us rejoice, for we are young and free.
It's a night filled with patriotism as the Mayor welcomes these new Australians with a stirring speech.
By the act of migration, the country was made. By that voluntary act and by the immigrants' ambitions, it was built. And it has been that way since European migrants first started arriving here, not too far from where we stand, over 200 years ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Where are you from originally?
Philippines.
From the Philippines.
After the formalities, a chance for celebratory drinks and a photo opportunity with the Mayor, Ben Keneally, wearing his chain of office.
Now you're just speeding from.
Right.
Good on you.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you for that.
How does it feel?
Oh, me too. Happy. Very happy.
I'm really excited. It's a feeling that actually is the moment that I've been looking forward for years.
Where have you come from?
Iran.
I'm from India, basically. Born and brought up there. I love this place. I think it's the best place in the world, you know. I'm proud to be an Australian today.
Where are you from?
Originally from Bangladesh.
How was the journey to get your citizenship?
You know, everything has up and down, right? Every road has its bend and its straight. But ultimately, you know that there's a standard that you have to meet because they are seeking like good people with good background that can contribute to this country.
It's the classic migration story. You get out what you put in. The country rewards hard work with all the benefits of citizenship. But things aren't necessarily as simple anymore, as Peter Mayers from Swinburne University explains.
Australia calls itself a settler society, and certainly when I grew up as a child of migrants in Australia in the 1960s, the concept we had of migration was that you got off the boat, as it was then, stepped onto the soil of Australia, and from that moment on, you were on a pathway to permanent residency. Now, particularly in the last 10 years or so, this has really changed, and we see a significant proportion of the Australian population and the Australian labour force now here on a temporary basis. So we have to ask ourselves, what sort of a society are we becoming?
7% of Australia's workforce are on temporary visas. In the 20 to 24 age bracket, that figure's 20%. The aim is to fill skills gaps in the Australian labour market. But it's not a change everyone welcomes. Dave Noonan is a National Secretary of the Construction, Forestry, Mining and Energy Union, the CFMEU.
There's been a shift in government policy from permanent migration, which built this country, particularly after the Second World War, to a policy of preferring temporary migration sponsored by employers. We've got real concerns about that because it places workers in inherently vulnerable circumstances and means that often their tenure in the country is tied to their continued employment. This gives employers enormous power, and sadly, we often see that power being exploited.
Two hours south of Sydney, a residential street on the outskirts of the small town of Bomaderry. I'm at the house of some Filipino welders who arrived in Australia 2 months ago on 457 visas. That means they're eligible to work here for 4 years. They pay Australian taxes, but there's no assumption they'll become Australian citizens. They're here to work and earn money to send home, but that's about it. They've left their families behind.
I am Jess Arbanahera, came from Sarangani province, Philippines. My son, I cried a lot when I came here in Australia, but I talked to him that don't worry, son. I will bring the bacons.
You bring home the bacon. It's the same story for Nelson, the oldest among men. He says he wants to improve the lives of his family.
Especially, I want to give a better future for my children.
How did you get this job?
Actually, I applied for Australia for almost 2 years before I got this job. I almost every day go to the agency in Manila just to find a job going to Australia.
But things haven't worked out quite as planned. It's midweek and the men are at home. Nelson, everyone's crowded around the laptop. What are they doing?
They're watching a movie. I think that movie is a movie by Liam Neeson, Taken.
This isn't how the men usually spend their days. They've been putting in a full working week plus 28 hours of overtime since they arrived here. That means only one day off a month. The men are now embroiled in a dispute over what they're being paid for that overtime. The site they work on is run by Manildra, a large Australian wheat processing company. But the men are actually employed by a Taiwanese firm called Chartung.
And this is the whole contract?
You signed this contract in the Philippines.
Yeah, it's the one that we signed in the Philippines.
But your experience of working here doesn't measure up to this contract.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which are the parts that are not correct?
The best part is that...
The men tell me that for the overtime hours they're working, they're being paid less than half what they were promised in Manila.
Do you feel that you were misled?
Yeah, we're misled. Because what we get now is not the one that they promised.
But it's not just a dispute over pay. It's also about their accommodation, which under their contract is provided by the employer. Until recently, 25 of them were living in a three-bedroom house.
16 Filipinos and 9 Chinese.
And how does it work with the shower?
Just like the toilet, some people wake up very early as 4 a.m.
The CFMEU trade union got involved in the men's case, and they've now been rehoused. Dave Curtin from the union intervened on the workers' behalf.
When people come from overseas to work in this country, the expectation in the law says that they're paid wages commensurate with what an Australian worker would earn and work under the same conditions. The law says that it has to be reasonable accommodation if you're provided with accommodation by an employer. This was far from reasonable.
I'll return to the fortunes of the Filipinos in Bomaderry later in the program. They've been assisted by the CFMEU, even though they're not members. The union have helped them navigate Australian law and to assert their rights. But of course, many workers from overseas are on their own. Where were you cleaning?
It was a stadium, basketball stadium and bank.
This 26-year-old Indian man, who came to Australia to study, wishes to remain anonymous because he doesn't want to jeopardise his pending immigration appeal. How many hours were you working?
I was working approximately 5 hours.
A night?
Yeah.
So that was 35 hours a week?
Oh, yeah.
But you were only supposed to be working 20 hours a week in terms of your visa?
Yeah, yes.
Were you aware of that?
No, I wasn't aware because since I wasn't knowing much rules and regulations of Australia here.
Students from overseas can work a maximum of 20 hours paid work a week in Australia. The young man's employer took full advantage of the fact he was breaking the law by not paying him. And of course, he had no grounds for appeal. Soon he was owed over $2,000. Increasingly desperate, he kept calling his accountant to see if she could persuade his employer to pay up.
She said, look, to be honest with you, this boss is not going to pay you. You're not the first guy who's suffering like this. You better forget the money. They're not going to pay you. She said me directly. I know personally 3 boys who got cheated by the same company.
He now has no money to fund his education and he's breached his visa conditions. His case is currently on appeal. If you're unsuccessful with the Department of Immigration, what will you do?
I'll have to go back to my home country. There's no option left.
And what will that mean for you?
Oh, I can't imagine. That's a big disaster.
And there are problems with another temporary work visa too, the 417, or working holiday visa, which allows young people to pay their way working on farms as they travel around Australia. Originally, it was used by backpackers coming from the US and Europe, where wages were similar to Australia. Times have changed, though, and so have the opportunities for exploitation, as migration consultant Mari Apostol explains.
You now have people coming from Taiwan, from Indonesia, etc., where the wage scales are much lower than Australian wage scales, and to whom, 6 months of working in Australia with an opportunity to work for 2 years, that's a really good opportunity to earn. So for some, it's more of wanting to work than wanting to go on holiday. And when that happens, then the possibility of their vulnerability to exploitation is there.
But exploitation is only part of the story of transient labour. I'm back in Botany Bay to explore another dimension of the phenomenon, divided families. Botany Bay doesn't just house an airport. It's also the home of one of Australia's biggest container ports. I'm climbing into a minibus driven by Un from the Mission to Seafarers. He picks up seamen who've just docked in port and drives them to shopping malls and supermarkets. It's their only means of transport.
Normally when the seafarers come aboard the bus, I use the seafarer term. I say, please let up.
The life of a seafarer is very challenging as well as stressful because they spend 9 to 12 months on board the vessels. They face the loneliness and the comfort of a home, the loved ones, their wife and children and relatives and friends.
Before long, Un has his first rides of the day.
And there are some seafarers waiting for
you. Yeah, they're coming up.
It'll be exciting to see you, actually.
Yes, my friend, how are you? What is your vessel? Lorry. You're going to the city.
You going nearest
to
mall.
Going to go to the nearest mall.
Yeah, yeah.
Then the captain turns up.
You have Australian currency or you need to change?
I have pounds.
You had an Australian currency.
If you can give me some currency, I don't say no.
The seafarers climb into the minibus.
Don't worry. Welcome on board, captain.
Yeah, thank you.
Can you tell me where you're from?
Far away from here. Romania.
And you're the captain of the ship?
Yes.
And what are you transporting?
God knows. We don't know.
Un explains to me that there's a big difference between the working conditions of the mostly European officers and the mainly Asian crew on many of these ships.
Officers that come from Europe, from the Western countries, their contracts are normally 3 months. They work 3 months on board the vessel and they have 2 months off or sometimes even 3 months off. Whereas the crew has a much longer contract for those who come from Asia, from Philippines or India or even from China or Myanmar, 9 months or sometimes 12 months. So that is where a lot of stress coming.
I then get chatting to Ramil from the Philippines.
How long have you been at sea?
I've been about 16 years at sea.
That's a long time.
Yes, ma'am. Very quite long time. We do this one for our family.
Who are your family at home?
I have my wife. She's today 8 years old, and she has cancer. It's ovarian, late stage, and I have one daughter. About 5 years old now.
I'm very sorry to hear about your wife.
Ramil won't see his wife for another 8 months. He has to work to pay for her treatment.
Chemotherapy is about $1,020 a month. It's about 55,000 pieces.
You must be very worried about her.
Yeah, I am worried, but I try to be strong. It's for my family and for my small daughter. Sometimes I can't sleep.
You can't sleep because you miss them so much?
Yeah, I miss them really, and to my wife. But I believe the saying that before, those who have sacrificed their sleep, food, laughter, and other means of joys of life, they called saints. Now they call seafarers. Hello.
Ramil calls home to his wife Bonavi and their daughter.
Can I see my little angel? Hello.
It's a special day. Ramil's wife and their daughter Erica will mark the occasion with a special outing.
We're planning to go to the city, Mom, and give some treat to my child with my family.
Even when Ramil is not there, you will celebrate his birthday?
Yeah. Yeah.
She warns Ramil not to drink too much in his own celebrations.
Just be good.
Be good always. I'm always good.
You're drinking, eh?
No, it's only a couple of years now. Don't think negative about me. You're always thinking negative.
Do you worry about him?
Yes, of course. It's just hard that you can't easily contact your husband, especially in times of trouble.
How do you get through all those hard times?
Through prayers, Mom, and of course I have to talk to my trusted friends.
And she has cause for worry. 3 months ago, a ship crewed entirely by Filipinos sank, with just one survivor. But Ramil, at least, is heartened that Bonavi seems to be looking a bit healthier.
You know, I'm quite happy because you gain weight a little bit. Not like before I came aboard, she's so, I mean, thin, you know.
And then, time for the couple to go off to their separate birthday celebrations.
I love you. I love you, baby. Bye-bye.
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 We love you, no matter what.
She's so brave dealing with this. She always tells herself that she doesn't have sickness anymore.
What are you cooking?
Cooking a dish. We call this sarsiad on the Philippines.
It's not good. It's not spicy.
Isn't it?
Back in Bomaderry, another Filipino far from home. Now housed in rather better living conditions than when the group of men first arrived to take up jobs as welders under Australia's temporary visa program.
Do you miss your family?
Yeah, I miss my family. It's a sacrifice when you're working miles away from your family. Mm. Especially my twin child is only 4 years old. When I'm calling them, they're asking me, Daddy, kailan ko? Daddy, when you will come back home?
Nelson and his colleagues are in dispute with their bosses over being paid a fraction of their promised overtime rate. I want to find out what went wrong, so I've travelled to the Philippines.
We've come to Manila, and we're outside the offices of YWA, the recruitment company who recruited the workers in Bomaderry. We've got an interview with the vice president. We're going to hear what she has to say.
Inside, I pass through a large waiting room where prospective workers are sitting waiting to be called to a window to have their paperwork processed. I then head to the boardroom where Singiragai speaks to me.
Their basic pay was actually in compliance with what was agreed upon. The overtime,
except for
the overtime is actually being recomputed, and everything that should have been given to the workers are being discussed right now. So anything that what is due to the workers, we will help with the pushing for that.
They'll get back pay?
Yes.
She blames the problems on the Taiwanese company that employed the workers, Cha Tung, who she says failed to understand how payrolls in Australia work. But she tells me this is a rare instance.
As a recruitment company, our principle is that we provide workers the genuine job opportunities, okay? We've deployed over 2,000 workers to Australia alone. And we've been doing everything that we can because our primary responsibility is to the worker.
But if it hadn't been for the Australian Union, who were alerted by Australian employees, mm-hmm. co-workers of the people that you'd recruited, none of this would have come to the attention of the authorities.
Possibly.
Neither Manildra, who own and run the site where the Filipinos are working, nor Cha Tung, the Taiwanese company that actually employs the men, responded to my request for an interview. But since I spoke to the men in Bomaderry, the Fair Work Ombudsman, which polices Australia's temporary visa program, has conducted an investigation into Cha Tung, and it's uncovered a much broader problem, which extends far beyond the Bomaderry site. The Ombudsman found that Cha Tung has brought dozens of Filipino and Chinese workers into Australia on a range of sites and underpaid them by hundreds of thousands of dollars, housing them in overcrowded accommodation. The Ombudsman has told me that Cha Tung promised the Filipino workers $21 an hour, but subsequently unlawfully deducted thousands of dollars in fees from their wages, resulting in them getting just over $7 an hour. In the case of the Chinese employees, they were paid nothing at all for 3 months' work. As a result of the Ombudsman's investigation, the workers will now receive back pay. I asked Henry Sherrill of the Migration Council of Australia if the case does indeed illustrate a broader problem in the system.
Of course, there's always going to be employers which don't play by the rules and which exploit our workers. However, we believe that those numbers are a very small part of the program.
Do you have figures on how many breach?
You know, perhaps between 2 to 4% of migrants under the program, their contracts perhaps will not comply with.
But for critics of temporary work visas, such as Dave Noonan of the CFMEU trade union, the case of the Bomaderry workers highlights the need for major reform.
temporary migration is being used to undermine job security, as has been done in other countries. We don't want to see the construction industry like the Gulf States, where all work is performed by exploited guest workers, and there are some very powerful forces in Australia that want that.
Yet Henry Sherrill says that temporary migration still has an important part to play.
I think that there are definitely benefits to this in a globalised economy and a globalised society. We need some of these visas to keep Australia competitive.
But for Peter Mayers, it throws up some complex philosophical issues for this so-called settler society.
Australia associates a lot of problems in other countries with the fact that migrants were not made part of the nation but were kept at arm's distance, and that led to conflict and social tension. So Australia said, no, we're not going to do it that way. We're going to be a settler society. People will become Australians, and we will avoid the kinds of tensions and conflict that we've seen in other countries. So if we want to maintain that sense of being a cohesive community where people are on a pathway to becoming citizens once they migrate to Australia, then we need to ask ourselves questions about where we're going with this temporary migration program.
But what of the families who are left at home when workers head overseas? Australia does allow temporary migrants to bring their families with them, but in practice, it's often too expensive to do so. That's certainly true of the Filipino welders in Bomaderry. Whilst in the Philippines, I arranged to meet up with Christina, Nelson's wife.
So who's in this picture that you're showing me on your phone?
This is Nelson. This is my eldest twin, Justin, then Denise, my eldest daughter, then my youngest is Joaquin.
Well, they look like lovely kids. Where are you in that photo?
Before Nelson got to...
Before he went to Australia.
She gives me an insight into just how difficult life is for the loved ones left behind. At the moment, Christina is living by herself in Manila, far from her children.
I live in a 15 square meters room. And I'm sharing it with three other tenants.
How old are your children?
My eldest is 12 years old.
My eldest is 12 years old.
My youngest is 29.
My twins are 4.
And who cares for them?
Okay. Since I have to work, I have to work also. I have to help. My mother-in-law takes care of the children. I visit them once a month. Or sometimes every 2 months.
How do your parents-in-law feel about caring for your children?
They love my kids. They love my kids.
Christina earns the equivalent of about $250 a month working in a factory that assembles pacemakers. Half of it she sends back to her children.
It's really hard for us to be separated, but we have to do this for our children.
Do you imagine that one day both you and Nelson and the family would live in Australia?
Wishful.
That's my one great wish.
We are aspiring for that.
Every family dreams of having a beautiful life with work, and all of you are together.
Next time on Workers Without Borders, I continue my journey in the Philippines, exploring the impact of three generations of overseas employment on a country where 10% of the population work abroad. I ask if there's any prospect of breaking the cycle of divided families. I'm Claudia Taranto. The producer was Lawrence Grizel.
There are dozens of different podcasts now available from the BBC, including news, documentaries, science, business, arts and sport. For details of them all, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.